This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. Drones can survey and capture data over distances without one person having to set foot in the area. Here in Chattanooga, Andy Carroll is co-founder of SkyTech, one of the leading companies in this country for unmanned aerial systems. Between COVID-19 and last month's severe weather, SkyTech's technology has had a lot of ground to cover lately.
Andy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
How did you and those with you in creating SkyTech come up with the idea?
SkyTech, we do mapping and remote sensing technology with everything from drones to satellites, and then working with partners of manned aircraft providers. My background was in that type of technology, working in mapping and remote sensing and geographic information systems. So 5 years ago, when this new technology was beginning to be permitted by the FAA for commercial operation, I was immediately interested, and through a common connection here in town, met my future business partner, Bill Rogers. Bill, always very focused on the latest technology, you know, kind of a techno geek, so to speak, but came from a very different business background. And he was at a good transition point where we just started kicking the idea around of, hey, what if we developed a company that provided services with these unmanned systems? And obviously, with my background, I wanted to use them for mapping and surveying and remote sensing. It just kind of grew organically. First office was the camp house down on Martin Luther King Boulevard. It grew from there to a company of about 10 individuals now, and we're based in North Chattanooga. But over the last 5 years, I've served clients in California, Michigan, the Virgin Islands, and all over in between. So it's been really fun. My partner brings a lot of the business acumen and experience, and I'm kind of bringing the technical and some of the big picture on the mapping and technology side.
And some of that background comes from this campus, our campus, UTC.
Yeah, I had a pleasure of coming through the graduate program in environmental sciences and caught it right when geospatial technology was really emerging. There was a National Science Foundation grant that the Environmental Science Department received in the late 90s that really kind of set the way for my future career and the career of many of the former colleagues and friends that came through that program. So UTC was one of the first to have a very nice GIS and remote sensing instruction lab. And we had funding from the U.S. Geological Survey and other groups, and kind of paid my way through graduate school and never thought it would end up flying robots and tasking satellites for a living, but that's where it ended up.
With the coronavirus pandemic, how has your work changed? When it comes to working remotely, that's part of what you've been doing all along.
Yeah, exactly. You know, remote sensing and mapping with satellites and drones, it's not a lot of high density public settings. We're usually in very rural places or, you know, operating from hundreds of miles above the surface of the earth with satellite partners. So we've been able to operate given the current COVID-19 pandemic and the realities that we're all living through. But we definitely see a slowdown just like everyone is. But fortunately, we've been able to get out and apply the technology and really emphasize on that remoteness, the capabilities in the system. So a lot of our clients, they may have staff cut in half. And so they have the same amount of assets and infrastructure that they're trying to monitor and to map or to manage the progress of a project, but there are fewer individuals to get out in the field and do that. So it's a perfect use of the technology there. And we've definitely seen an uptick in monitoring and mapping services with some of those clients. Another thing with the technology, you know, obviously CDC, health departments, government organizations are using this mapping technology to track density of cases, and there's a lot of work being done to build systems to help predict and notify people when they're getting close to a potential hotspot of COVID-19. So there's some exciting work that Apple and Google are collaborating on to do this. And there are actual individuals here in Chattanooga that are working together to figure out how we can leverage that technology and help all of us during this current crisis. The other interesting thing, the neat use case of the technology was for the tornado response. So not only do we have a pandemic occurring and need to social isolate, but then we have a tornado come through on the day after Easter. And we were able to partner with the university and through the support of local foundations, acquire satellite imagery and look at the tornado impact zone and provide that information to EPB, to UTC for more research, the city of Chattanooga and Hamilton County and some of the other responders. So it's exciting to see that the technology can assist during these challenging times. We were able to partner with UTC and facilitate the acquisition of some satellite imagery for the tornado impact zone. And what that allowed us to do is to rapidly calculate the full extent of damage. So we were able to use our mapping software to figure out where did we have major loss of canopy, identify roof damage, on and on with some of the typical impacts that you get from, you know, the high winds or the tornado conditions. So, but we were able to create a set of applications and some data feeds that the city and the county and local partners were able to incorporate into their systems to support the recovery effort.
As we deal with this pandemic, as the technology continues to change, to get even sharper, what do you see ahead?
We're going to be challenged by the privacy concerns and issues that citizens have. I mean, I know the technology exists to be able to track cell phones at any time. That's not turned on, but if someone were to volunteer, we have mapped out known locations of where we have higher densities of the virus. There are opportunities to create applications that would keep you away from those zones or give you a warning. The challenge is if we create that, if we voluntarily turn on that capability, we're putting a lot of trust in the providers of that technology that they're going to turn it off when the pandemic is over. So it's something that everyone's struggling with across the board. I've been in discussions with individuals here in town from local foundations and at the university and the health department. It's really exciting to see, you know, the IGT lab, which is the GIS lab that the university currently maintains down in the former Sims Center building. They've been real leaders in partnering with a lot of the local government and organizations. So we're all trying to figure this out right now. What level of privacy are we willing to kind of hand over temporarily to help control the impact of this virus? I don't think we're there yet, and it's going to take more ongoing development of the and proof of concepts with the technology, but I see something emerging by the end of the summer as far as the initial applications and the capabilities.
Where can people go online to follow everything that you're doing?
You can always check out what we're doing at SkyTech. It's skytechllc.com. We have a couple blogs where we're mentioning sort of the work that we're doing during the current pandemic and also some of the other technology developments that are ongoing.
All right, Andy, thanks so much.
Thanks, Ray.
Signal Centers here in Chattanooga is marking Global Accessibility Awareness Day by launching a 4-week webinar program starting tomorrow at 1 p.m. The day highlights digital accessibility and inclusion for people with disabilities and impairments. Lana Little is with Signal Centers, and Jeff Milliner is with the Enterprise Center.
Lana, Jeff, thanks for joining us.
Absolute pleasure.
Glad to be here.
Tell us more about this day.
This Thursday is Global Accessibility Awareness Day. We originally had planned to have a one-day live conference at Chattanooga State with a lot of our community partners and really deal with accessibility issues. And we had speakers from all over the country coming in and top of the field thought leaders in technology. Well, with the COVID-19 challenges, we have decided to do this in a virtual format. So we'll be going to a WebEx platform with Chattanooga State as a very strong partner, helping us with that. So we're going to kick off with a series of eight different workshops, but 4 days. So each Thursday for the next 4 weeks, from 1 to 3 p.m., you can sign up to do online free webinars and find out pretty much anything you ever wanted to know about accessibility. We've learned a lot, and our partners have all pulled together, and we've all learned a lot. So it's actually working very well to do what we plan to do initially. Actually, it's expanded the base of people being able to attend the seminar, because basically you could come from anywhere in the world and join in. And it's free, which is another advantage because our partners aren't paying for lunches this time around. And a lot of the in-person expenses didn't happen. But we'll still be paying the speaker fees and captioning, live interpreting. So there are still some costs involved. But our sponsors are covering that this year. So there's no charge for any of these workshops.
How much of a response have you gotten from outside the Chattanooga area, outside the Southeast?
We just went online last week with the registration link. We haven't pulled all the data, but one of our speakers, the keynote's actually in California. So again, he's not going to have to hop on a plane and come, so he can go live from California. We have other speakers that are in Atlanta, some in Nashville. So everybody's just coming in from wherever they are. And so we have a great slate of speakers that aren't going to be traveling, but they're going to still be ready for a live talk with us.
And all of this is about digital accessibility and inclusion for people with disabilities and other impairments. Jeff, that brings us to the work that you do at the Enterprise Center and how it is partnering with Signal Centers on this event and series.
Honestly, in response to COVID-19 and the changes that everyone has had to experience, you know, we started this conversation by talking about working remotely. These are challenges that are exacerbated if accessibility is an issue. Signal Centers has been doing this work for decades. Digital inclusion and equity are not new ideas. They've been highlighted by our current situation, but on-the-ground partners in Chattanooga have been doing this for ages and ages. We're really excited that Hamilton County and Chattanooga were just recently recognized by the National Digital Inclusion Alliance as a trailblazer, one of 14 communities around the country. For us, this work is about continuing to plant that flag in the ground, that this is the kind of community that we want to live in, the kind of community where everybody has access to the opportunities that 21st century have to offer. To hold up leaders like Lana, like Signal Centers, like our partners and sponsors engaged in this, to support this kind of work for, like I said, a community that we're all excited to live in.
What are some of the things that you've both learned in having to switch gears so fast from what was originally an in-person event to all virtual?
I think from my end, I've seen what the back door side of WebEx looks like intimately. We have been learning how to do live interpreting, pin the box, run captioning at the same time, how to truly be accessible. And we've really played with the features, done several trial runs. From that end of it, we've really learned a lot technically that we'll be able to help other people when they try to do the same thing and go from a live conference to a virtual one. I already have another conference. It's an 8-state conference that's come to me and said, so when you guys get this thing figured out, will you please be on our committee and help us with this? So word travels fast.
I think that's exactly it. Accessibility was the goal of the conference when it was in person. It's got to be our goal in moving it online. So it was learning a number of new platforms and ways to solve some of the same barriers and challenges that individuals in our community face and coming up with a technical solution. I don't think there's a community in the world better positioned to answer things like that than Chattanooga. So it's been a challenge, but it's been an exciting opportunity. This doesn't just exist for now. Connectivity isn't going away. Our reliance on technology isn't going away. Making sure that we're able to provide the same level of engagement, of information, of access, regardless of whether it's in person or not, has always been the mission of this conference, this event, and this series. So we're really excited to be able to move forward with it. And as Lana said, really expand the number of people who can participate and learn from some of the innovators and technologists who've been doing this work in Chattanooga for a long time.
And how do you see your work beyond the event and beyond the series changing as we head into later this year?
Well, we've been partnering with Jeff and Tech Goes Home and the Enterprise Center a lot of different ways. We do provide technology to people who can't afford it. So that's one big thing in some areas where people just cannot afford technology, they can't afford internet. You have a lot of children who are going to school, can't do their homework because they don't have internet services in their home. So we partnered with Tech Goes Home and they helped put us with different providers that provide low-cost internet services. We've gotten donations of laptops. We can turn around and give them out to families in the community on a loan or a reutilized basis so they can still keep up with schoolwork or even work. Some people have been sent home to work, but they don't have the devices they need to be able to do their work. So we've gotten requests from a lot of different people, and just the relationship we have together on being able to train people on their devices on a remote basis. We're doing that with people every day. So that remote training component, we've been doing that to some extent, but now we've had to do it across the board while we were doing no in-person services. But one good thing about that, it has addressed so many times when people who can't afford equipment, can't afford the gas to come back and forth to different trainings at our center, they can do it remotely. They may not have public transportation in their counties, but from remote locations, they've been able to join in. We've taught them how to use Zoom and different platforms where we can actually do training, and it saves them money on gas and time, and it's not a hardship anymore. So that's one way. The digital equity has been amazing when you look at that from that perspective. We were in the middle of one of the Tech Goes Home classes, and we finished out with online training rather than in person. So it can be done. We're going to be doing some virtual Vision Academy vision camps this summer because our students who are blind tend to touch everything and everybody. That's how they get a lot of information tactily. So we decided we were going to do a camp in the box idea. So on Monday, this is our whatever is in the box. It's going to be our Monday day, and we're going to pull out some things to have camp virtually with our blind students. So getting very creative, but it's doable. We're learning a lot about that.
COVID-19 has highlighted issues that existed before, will continue to exist afterwards. We're still going to have some of these same challenges. Internet access, connectivity, cost, all of these things can be barriers to really full participation, but they're not the only barriers when we talk about accessibility. The keynote speaker, Jared Spool, will be talking about moving from accommodation to universal design, making sure that the systems, the products, the applications, the platforms that we build work for everyone and not just a subset. And so that's the Enterprise Center's work going forward. It's Signal Center's work going forward, but it's all of our work going forward.
And where can people go online to participate in all this?
It's on the Signal Center's website, so www.signalcenters.org, and also on the Facebook page.
And Jeff, the Enterprise Center?
You can visit us at the enterprisecenterctr.org.
All right. Lana, Jeff, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ray.
Time to talk about bird watching. Laura Marsh is an ornithologist by trade, and recently she founded Nova Conservation, which seeks to connect people with wildlife experiences. This weekend, Laura is teaching an online class, Bird Watching from Your Couch, at thechattery.org on Saturday, starting at 9 a.m.
Laura, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me how birds captured your imagination years and years ago.
I was in my undergraduate program in ecology at University of Tennessee, Knoxville. And I knew I wanted to study conservation and ecology and organismal biology, but I didn't know which organism to focus on. I wasn't one of those bird people that from a young age was just into birds all the time. I know some people like that, and they are incredible. I got kind of a late start in life. I was, like I said, in college. And I first identified a bird on my porch in our apartment on campus. And it was a tufted titmouse. And I was so excited that I properly identified this little tiny bird. And it made me realize there's a whole world of species just outside our window that we can study and watch and observe and identify and learn about. So I took my first ornithology class at UT Knoxville and was just hooked from there. I wanted everything to do with birds. I call birds a gateway to conservation, because once you learn about birds, they're so accessible. You can see them outside. You can see them from your car. You can be a casual bird watcher, or you can be a very in-depth, hardcore, big year type birder, which is where they go and try to count as many species as possible, see as many species as possible in a year across the whole world. There are so many different levels that you can experience through bird watching. And in any level, it draws people to think about conservation, which is kind of the ultimate goal. How do we conserve species?
And your master's thesis focused on how we disrupt the lives of birds.
That's right. I studied with Dr. David Aborn, and he has been banding, bird banding, which is a process where you catch birds in mist nets safely, and you put an aluminum band on the leg of the bird, which has a unique number associated with it. And then you record things like age, species, sex, fat content, weight, measure different parts of their body. So I compared birds I caught at Greenway Farms, which is a city-owned park here locally, away from disturbances, human disturbances specifically, away from people on trails. Whereas his data has been collected for years near trails, very close to people, hiking, walking, dog walkers, runners, what have you. So I compared the bird body mass index, the bird species caught away from humans on trails and near humans on trails. And we found a significant difference in migratory birds, birds that are just traveling through. They're called neotropical migrants because they migrate from Central and South America in the winter all the way here to North America, up into Canada, some of them, in the summer for the breeding season. So those birds were more susceptible to changes, to fluctuations in their energy levels, their fat content. They were more sensitive to people disturbing them on trails.
So what are you going to teach on Saturday, and how are you going to teach it online, which is a challenge if we're talking about birds and nature, and you and everybody else participating in the class has to do it through screens?
Right. It is a unique challenge. Our first class last month, actually, and it went over pretty well. I tried to use my camera to show birds outside of my window, but that was not as successful as I had hoped. So I created a slideshow. I showed this at the last class, just highlighting common species that you would see here in Chattanooga, whether you live downtown, close to downtown, Lookout Mountain, birds that pass through our yard, migrants, things like that. So people participated from all over the country, but I'm focusing on birds here in the southeast region of the United States. And since it is hard to see birds outside your window through a screen and show that, there is a live stream through Cornell University. They have a great website full of resources for birders through the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. And they have a live stream with their Project Feeder Watch, which is a project that uses observations of backyard feeders from all over the country. And they observe and then collect data on birds and birds' behavior just through simple observations during just people watching feeders. So I will be showing that live stream. Now, that live stream is in New York, so it's not specific to this region, but it will give a good observation of how birds behave, how to identify certain birds in the eastern United States, what they are doing, how they are defending their food resources, how they act, pointing out different types of birds. For example, doves act much differently than chickadees, and grackles will act much differently than woodpeckers. So being able to distinguish those differences between groups of species that can help you as a new or intermediate bird watcher learn more about the birds in your own backyard. The proceeds for this class will go to Chattanooga Audubon Society, and that's a local nonprofit. It's the oldest wildlife conservation group here in Chattanooga, and currently we are not associated with National Audubon, which a lot of people are surprised by, but we are taking steps to become affiliated with National Audubon. So lots of changes and good things are coming the way of Chattanooga Audubon Society.
And people who want to participate can sign up at thechattery.org. Where can people go online to follow more of what you do?
So I have a very active Instagram page. I have one, but my personal page is at Native Marsh. I highlight all sorts of ornithology, local outdoor experiences. And then for NOVA Conservation, it's at NOVA_conservation. And I have Instagram and Facebook, as well as a website, novaconservation.com, where you can learn more. And definitely check out the Chattery, and they'll have links to my page as well.
All right, Laura, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Scenic Routes. More in a moment.
This is Scenic Routes, Talking Writing. I'm Richard Winham. My guest is Joel Harris. The music you're listening to is an Estonian lullaby written by the native Estonian composer Arvo Part. Chattanooga singer and songwriter Joel Harris is a big fan of Mr. Part's writing. In times of stress, Joel looks to music as a panacea. So when the COVID-19 virus hit, and he began hearing about the number of people affected by the pandemic and the subsequent demands being made on the Chattanooga Food Bank, he started putting together an album featuring local musicians that would be both a source of solace for people under stress and a fundraiser for the Chattanooga Food Bank.
So the original concept was just, this was probably early March, I think, maybe mid-March. This is when everything was starting to kind of go into lockdown. The quarantine measures had taken place and, you know, people were out of work for a couple weeks. I fortunately have not had to stop working during this time. I've been able to continue to go to work. I work in a pretty isolated setting. So obviously everyone's home, you know, we're not seeing friends. And so part of this project kind of came out of the desire just kind of stay connected to musician friends around the city. Originally, I was just going to try to record because I have, you know, somewhat of a studio set up in my house to try to record four or five songs myself and tagged a couple friends. We were going to do some fun things like, you know, cover some old traditional songs or cover each other's songs and then put it out just for people to listen to if, you know, people wanted new music or, you know, something to do. It kind of blossomed a little bit into, well, maybe if we put these online somewhere, they could be available, but we can use that to advertise for the food bank, because I had kind of become aware through social media of what their needs were and how simple it was to help them, both in terms of financial donations going a very long ways, and then also volunteer time.
The resulting collection is called Redeem the Time. All 13 songs are on SoundCloud under Joel Harris, Redeem the Time. From it, this is Josh Green with his wife Linda singing an Irish hymn called I Will Arise.
Come ye weary, heavy laden, lost and ruined by the fall. If you tarry till you're better, you will never come at all. Come.
Kind of the genesis for it. And I also wanted to record songs that I know in my own life, when I've gone through difficult periods of time, there's always been certain songs that I return to that have brought me a lot of comfort. They're a little bit of a security blanket for life. Has been that way my entire life. And I know a lot of other people feel that way about different kinds of music. And so,
which songs were they that worked for you?
For me, oh boy, there's a few songs by Radiohead. They're one of the kind of bands who've been a soundtrack throughout my life. I started listening to them when I was like 13. You know, that was 20 years ago. So, I would definitely say their album In Rainbows. There's a few songs on there. Weird Fishes, song Reckoner. Songs to me that are very, I would put that on and it's a very kind of therapeutic song for me, but they kind of have music throughout their catalog like that. From A Love Supreme by John Coltrane has been one of those. There's a few kind of modern classical pieces by a composer named Arvo Pärt that I've returned to a lot. And those are kind of songs I've listened to through difficult points of life because they're full of a lot of emotion and kind of feel like a bit of a placeholder for my own emotions. Way to contain those emotions, I guess.
Coming to you live and direct from Sky Punch Studios. Summer Dregs, let's go.
Is there any love?
Yes.
In this world?
Oh, yes.
Is there any love?
You know we have to do it.
In this world?
COVID-19 in 2020.
Is there any love? In this world,
oh, oh, baby.
Is there any love?
Is there any love?
Let
it breathe. Oh yeah, oh yeah. Oh baby, oh baby. Quarantine can't get the best of me. Oh yeah, yeah. Eating cheese, it feel like ecstasy. Hey, hold up, pray for keys to bring the heavenly to the ones in need. Indeed, the boy been catching Z. Remember me, that's what he said when he was telling me the penalty. Just for my sins, I will erase them all to 70. Idols and gods, they can't compare to me, your ebony. Can't go get praise for what I've done for thee. Oh baby, remember when he saved me. So crazy, I'm waiting. Got no need for entertaining Satan. I'm faded, but all up in his grace. I'm praising. He's still forgiving all my dirty, irky cases. Look, I just know, spirit is to grow. Till this light in love, so I grow. With my kin and folk, Jesus be the one bringing hope. Ain't so many no more. Thank you for the blood. Yes, I know your love is so intimate and infinite.
In this world.
Is there any love in this world? I'm singing.
Is there any love?
Is there any love? Is it
in this world?
In this world, in this world, in this world.
Oh.
Is there any love? Is there any love?
Is there any love? Is there any love?
Is there any love? Is there any love?
Hey,
Mark, go get it.
Ha, now I say it can't get the best of me. Feel like Job standing right next to me. The Lord giveth and taketh, that's our reality. Stay walking in faith, cause that's the recipe. GPS, that's God's power steering. Man, his power is winning, even the blind can see it. Whenever he's singing, I know the deaf can hear it. Telling villains and sinners they too can feel the rhythms. Son of a fiend, but still learn how to pray. No more fleeing for scenes, I stay to show my face. Fulfilling my dreams, cause he award me grace. I love it when he say today. Church.
In this world.
In this world,
singing.
In the
for your love.
Yes.
Hey, hold up.
Let me ask you now.
I got some homies.
Max. Big shout. I got some homies in the hospital right now. Big shout.
Let me ask you now.
Keep on doing what you do. We're going to do our part. We're going to get through this together.
Your notion was that music was a sort of essential salve for almost everybody.
Yes, that is, yeah, very much kind of the way I operate with music. It's part of the way that I write music. Writing a song and getting something out is often a way that's kind of helping me work through feelings or experiences that I don't necessarily know how to do consciously.
So you found yourself at this point in early mid-March, like most of us, trying to come to terms with what was happening, that something was clearly happening, but it wasn't really clear at that point exactly what. But certainly a lot of people were being impacted. So you took what was impacting you personally and put that in the greater community. And your empathy was for people who were being hit in a way that you weren't, because you were able to keep your job.
Yeah, and I think I also felt, you know, especially in the early days, and we're obviously not out of the woods with COVID-19 at all now, but in the early days, I think I felt a lot of fear, not so much of, I think I just felt the fear of life changing, and I've had a number of health problems over the last few years, and, you know, things that are okay now, but have gone through periods of time where something was very wrong physically that I couldn't figure out and no doctors could figure out. And that kind of uncertainty was pretty scary, but it also, with this new virus, you know, I don't feel certain that if I were to contract the virus, I would be fine. I don't live with that kind of illusion.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Joel, I didn't put that together. You said that the reason that we hadn't been able to connect was because you had been in the hospital. And that was fairly recently, right? Well,
yeah, that's actually a different concern that's been resolved, thankfully. But I definitely had just become aware, I think, more in the last few years, that my physical body is something I can't take for granted. My health is not something I can take for granted.
This is Scenic Roots Talking Writing. My guest is Joel Harris. The music is from an album he curated called Redeem the Time. The last song we heard was Summer Dregs and So Chill. This is Libby with a song originally recorded by Chet Baker. Thank you. You're a relatively young man to be thinking like that. Have you had serious physical setbacks?
No, it's just kind of been ongoing chronic problems. A lot of them ended up being kind of related to stress. So as I've kind of learned to take control of that and lower the stress level in my own life, those things have improved. But I've definitely had the experience of not knowing what was wrong and feeling very much at odds with my own body. So entering into the pandemic, feeling like I couldn't take for granted that I was just going to be okay.
I can see exactly what you're saying. I mean, we all started thinking that way to some extent, but for somebody who has already had inexplicable health challenges, that must have been particularly scary for you.
Yeah, I definitely didn't feel I could lean on anything with a lot of certainty. And I'm somebody who kind of has, you know, dealt with more morbid side of life for most of my life, you know, dealing with mental health issues and depression. Those things I have felt a lot, you know, are healthier in my life now than they have been 10 years ago. I think I kind of saw the approaching pandemic as an opportunity to try to make the most of the time that was right around me, right in front of me, and the relationships that were closest to me. You know, reaching out initially was just a way of saying, hey, let me do something productive with this time. And then as it kind of became more apparent that a lot of other people were in that same boat, I started reaching out to different friends and musicians that I knew would be interested in that or who kind of think about music in a similar way.
Sing me to sleep, sing me to sleep. I'm tired and I want to go to bed. Sing me to sleep, sing me to sleep. And then leave me alone. Don't try to wake me in the morning, 'cause I will be gone. Don't feel bad for me. I want you to know deep in the cell of my heart, I will feel so glad to go.
How did you conceive the album? When you were reaching out to people, were you thinking in terms of how their music would work in that organized concept? You know, with an album, you know, you sort of operate on the assumption that somebody's going to listen to this and they're going to listen to it from one end to the other. So you tend to think, at least to some extent, about flow. You know, how is this going to work as a playlist or whatever? However people conceive of these things these days, because so much is streamed and virtual. The concept of an album still exists, but I'm not sure how many people actually think like that anymore.
Yeah, well, it was very much a part of my thinking, because I have always loved the concept of like a benefit or collaborative album, but I don't think most of them work very well. It usually just ends up being a collection of songs, and they don't have much to do with each other, or they're hastily put together and aren't really the artist's best work. And so what I was kind of hoping for is a unifying theme, feel to the album. And what I kind of went with was the idea of lullaby. So, you know, as a kid, lullaby is a song that you hear. You may be sung to sleep with a lullaby. But as adults, we still kind of need music in that way. But I think that becomes a little more intermixed with more complicated feelings as an adult. There's, you know, in a situation like we're in now, you're coping with fear and you're coping with grief, the loss of the things that are changing in life. And so I felt like, you know, sort of the goal was to create songs that brought a sense of comfort using the idea of lullaby as a little bit of a touchstone.
How did you approach that? When you contacted the people you knew, did you give them that concept and ask them to write something specific for the record?
Yes. I was kind of constrained first to people that I knew had the access that could record something of a higher, you know, quality. So I kind of had to scan through the different people who were making music in the city and find those folks, and then also kind of think about their particular styles and think about what might work to have them do. And so the album has got a number of original songs. It's got some covers of kind of friend songs. So, you know, I covered one of Telemonster's songs, for instance. And then there is a bunch of covers that are sort of more classic, like songs from like Chet Atkins, U2, M83.
Hello, everybody. I'm still here. I'm telling like a bad penny. There's no getting rid of me. And I hope you're all keeping well and doing for your too. Bye-bye for now. I love you all. Think about you so long.
Kind of pulling from songs that had that feel that were already written, that are really strong songs that have held up over time.
Okay, so let's take the U2 song.
That song in particular was actually one that I did instrumentation for and asked a friend to sing. That was a song that was kind of on my list of songs that fit that model of comforting lullaby type of song.
So a lot of the music that's on the album, you were directly involved in producing it. It wasn't just a song that somebody else produced and sent to you.
Yeah, there's a mixture of both of those things. You know, Libby covered a Chet Baker song, and that was because I know her and we've worked on some things together. I said, you know, do you want to be involved in this project? And she said, yes. And so I said, well, you pick a song. I trust that you're going to come up with a song that'll fit the vibe of this project. It's kind of the same thing with Ben Vanderhart, So Chill and Summer Dregs. I just sort of said, you know, here's the goal, here's the vision. And then I had a few other people kind of approach me with ideas as well. There's a cover by Ben Vanderhart of Asleep by the Smiths. That was kind of a song I had in the back of my mind. And I said, hey, Ben, what do you think? Do you want to cover this song? And he was like, yeah, that's one of my favorite songs. So, you know, a few kind of serendipitous moments like that as well.
How long did that process take?
So the whole thing from kind of the initial stages of contacting people and arranging ideas and working on my own tracks to the point of having it mastered and then ready to go was about a month and a half.
That's really quick, isn't it?
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. I was really having to kind of push and do a lot of work to get things going, but it was really up to the artists, you know, what they were going to do, and it kind of blew me away. I had a few people say, yeah, I'll work on that, and then within like a few days, they sent me something that was almost done. I got the sense that it was a really good thing for people to be able to work on some of these songs.
Be thou my vision, the Lord of my heart, not be all else to me, save that thou art.
album is called Redeem the Time. It's on SoundCloud. There's also a link to the Chattanooga Area Food Bank. Since the onset of the pandemic, the Chattanooga Food Bank has been running Operation Feed Our Neighbors in response to the dramatic increase in the number of people in the area facing hunger. According to the Chattanooga Area Food Bank's website, the number of people asking them for help has risen by 30%. Helping them will cost the food bank an estimated $40,000 a month. Every dollar donated will help to provide four meals. Scenic Roots, Talking Writing. I'm Richard Winham.
I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. We come to you from WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Thanks, as always, to our producers, Haley Solomon, Carly Dodson, Elena Nourabadi, Connor Brown, and Will Davis. Email us at scenicroots423@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at scenicroots423. Listen to us online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. For Richard Winham and the rest of our team, join us again next time for Scenic Roots.